You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Good morning, my friend.
Good morning to you, my friend. It's early in the morning.
It is. It is early. Daylight savings.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was daylight savings when you were like, let's do it early. And I didn't realize it's even an hour earlier.
Yeah, oh yeah, sorry about that. Well, you know, it's there's a lot of daylight savings hate going on the internet right now. A lot of daylight savings hate.
Oh, because they've lost an hour of sleep?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I couldn't exactly say why.
I mean, every year, at some point, maybe it's time to stop complaining about it.
Yeah, it's like when you live in Florida, people complaining about the heat. It's like, yeah, I know, we all live here. Like,
yeah,
we're aware.
So this is the way it is. So, you know, but speaking of Florida, you know that Florida passed a bill that now has to go to the Congress of the United States of America to not do away with daylight savings time, but to do away with standard time. Only Florida would be like, you know what? We would just like to get away and just do away with regular time. Can we just do away with the regular time completely? Because you can leave, you can say we're not going to do daylight savings time. A state can do that. But if you want to say we don't want to do standard time, basically,
so we want to stay in daylight savings.
We want to stay in daylight savings time. So basically, it's like Eastern time would not apply to us.
Wow.
We would not be Eastern time. We would be Florida time. And basically, during the winter, we would be Central time. And during daylight savings time, we would be Eastern time.
What is the point of that?
Well, the point is that we're Floridians and we don't like that it gets dark early, I guess.
Is it really that big of a deal to people? Like I don't even think about it. Usually it's the night before. Somehow you find out through some media that tomorrow's the time change, and you fall back or you spring forward. And I just don't understand people that get so angry about it.
I don't either, but I don't think it's about the day of the change. I think it's about overall in the winter it gets dark at 5:30, and why can't we just have it get dark? People would rather have it be darker earlier in the morning. Like they'd rather get up and it be dark than have it get dark at 5:30. As a photographer, I like it because that means you're doing your sunset, you know, shots at 6:30 instead of 5:30, which I actually like that. In the winter, I actually like that because then you're more likely to avoid traffic. And you could book someone after work to do a session in the park in November, which you can't do normally. Because
I love that now we'll be able to say that we have lobbied the US Congress as a state. So that Boo Ray can have different time, can have a later, so he doesn't have to sit in traffic when he's doing a beach portrait.
Well, apparently they have to do change a law or something in order for us to do it. So I wouldn't get your hopes up about it happening too fast there, Floridians. You know,
yeah, chances are no. Signs point to no.
We'll be the first one. We'll be the first state to ever do it. I mean, there are other states that are not on daylight savings time. For example, Hawaii does not observe daylight savings time.
Isn't Arizona or
and Arizona,
like
I think,
that?
Is one or something like that. But there's no state that has said we would like to not observe standard time. We want to be daylight savings time all the time. But when I was reading about this, you know, there are parts of eastern Maine, because the top easternmost states, they dabble with this idea all the time. But their problem is they can't do it because they're so small that so many people live in one state and work in the other that it would just be a nightmare. You know,
it sounds dumb.
So like, they're always like, Vermont's like, we'll do it if every state around us does it. Well, good luck getting that to happen. But yeah, there are parts of eastern Maine where between Thanksgiving and Christmas, it gets dark before 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my sister lives in England, and she says, yeah, like 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon in the wintertime, it's dark. Like, you get so little actual daylight.
That is crazy go nuts.
Yeah, yeah. What are you going to do? I mean, who cares? Like, you literally have the same amount of daylight every day. It just depends on what time you like to get up.
That's not true. You don't have literally the same amount of daylight. The day gets shorter during the winter.
Okay, so the day is shorter. Yeah. And again,
much shorter. You don't get, like, 12 hours of daylight during the winter. You get, like, sometimes...
Yeah, I suppose you're right now that I think
you get less daylight.
Boy, I need to do some homework.
It's not like
science.
The sun's coming up at 3 a.m. and then going down at 3 p.m. It's coming up at like 6:37. It goes down at 3. And then in the summer, it comes up at like 6 o'clock and goes down at 9.
Right. So then the daylight savings time exists to give us the maximum amount of sunlight possible?
That was the idea. But I think it was mostly, you know, I'm sure it's agrarian. I'm sure it has to do with agriculture that it was done. You know, first of all, it's a good idea, first of all, because it saved money. Because light use is electricity, heating, you know. So having more of your workday happen when it's daylight hours is actually a money saver. And I think that's why it was put in place. I don't know. And for the farmers, I don't know, something to do with chickens.
It's all... Damn. Yeah, because you know what? The chickens are going to wake you up. The rooster's not going to, doesn't know what daylight savings time is.
You don't know. Sun comes up, sun's coming up. I'm like, because I sleep in anyway, relatively speaking, but I will say I would not like, I've never liked when I lived in locations where there were times during the winter when you got up for school and it was still dark outside.
Yeah.
That's tough, right? That's tough.
Well, I blame the farmers because and the chickens because, you know, roosters notoriously use flip phones rather than touchscreen phones.
Yes.
And their little claws can't activate the touchscreen. And so they don't have a phone that really updates the time automatically, which is why, you know, which is why they are always just using the sun as their as the time when they start.
That was a long way to go for that joke. It really was a long way to go for that joke.
You pulled the cell phone.
You thought that the cell phone was going to be the joke that the roosters use a cell phone, and that's why they crow when the sun comes up because of the type of cell phone that they use.
I would never
in a million years have made that connection. You know, and that's.
I'm glad that you're explaining the joke. That's great. That's how you know.
I'm not explaining the joke. I'm analyzing the joke. It's just that I never would have made the connection to the cell phone. But see, that's right there is indicative of a generation that you. So equate your cell phone with time.
Right, yeah.
See, absolutely. I wouldn't make that. I would have made that move. But there's a generation that their cell phone is a timekeeping device. That's where you look at for the time. And so when you're thinking, okay, I did a joke about roosters and time, your mind goes to cell phone.
Well, okay, so maybe. But isn't it the first thing that you look at in the morning is you check the time on your phone?
No, I have a clock next to my bed.
You have a clock. Alarm clock for Christmas.
What are you, crazy old man? Is it steam powered? You have a clock next to the bed? What the hell?
You have a sundial just outside your window, and you kind of open the curtain.
It's digital. It has the flip over. You know the flip over letters that flip over. It's not like that. But there you go. You're proving my point is that you don't have a clock by your bed.
No, huh?
See, that's funny. You just have to. So, in order to tell the time, you have to actually reach over and grab something and look at it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have a. You know, if you have the right little stand, then you just stick your phone on it to charge, and there you go. My watch and my phone are both there next to the bed.
Okay. Does your phone have the always on thing? So you can just look, and it's got the time displayed on it all the time.
No. You gotta touch it.
I'm anachronistic. You have to reach out and touch something to tell what time it is. Where I can just roll over and look at the time because it's on the clock.
Well, sometimes the old ways are the best ways.
They are. The old ways of actually having a clock. Now, to be fair, though, I don't use the alarm on the clock anymore. So if I have to set an alarm, I just use my phone.
Because I can just tell my phone to set an alarm.
And you say,
I just go, hey, Siri, set an alarm for 6 a.m. Right. It's like, okay, no problem. I actually always set two alarms. I set them a half an hour apart. One alarm to remind me that I'm going to need to get up in a half an hour, and one that's like, stop dicking around on your phone in the morning and go get in the shower. That's the second alarm.
Okay, is the second alarm your get-up time, and you set another one for 30 minutes early, or is the first one your get-up time, and the other one is the emergency?
Depends on how much I had to drink the night before.
Okay.
Because otherwise, that first alarm is just a, hey, you got 30 minutes left. Sometimes I really wish that I was just that spring out of bed kind of guy. I'm really not. I really force myself into being a morning person. I really do.
I'm not a spring out of bed kind of guy, but I don't ever hit a snooze. If that alarm goes off, I'm up because that's just dangerous. That's just, you know, you're just fooling yourself.
That's admirable, I guess.
You just got to get up. You just get up. And that way I set my alarm for the very latest time that I can get up.
Have you seen that device? I saw it on a Facebook ad or for a Kickstarter or something. It's like a little mat that's like Bluetooth hooked up to your phone, and your alarm with the app won't stop ringing until you put your feet on the mat.
Okay. And then you just go back to sleep sitting up in the bed, maybe?
And so you sit up, put your feet on the mat, and then lay back down.
I've seen the one that's got the two wheels on it, and when it's time to wake up, it goes off, and then it rolls off the counter and just starts rolling all around the floor. And you have to like pounce on it like a cougar.
Yeah, we're admitting as a society that we're just not going to get up when the alarm goes off. So we have to have an alarm that like berates us. Yeah, and I used to use music. You can set to play certain songs with some things. You can say like, "Oh, play my." But I realized that what happens is that I end up hating the song that wakes me up every morning.
That's
so you
valid.
Can't pick a song you like. You got to pick like Mambo Number 5 or something terrible.
Well, see, that's even worse though, because now you really hate waking up because oh my god, that's going to put you in a bad mood for the whole start of your day.
Yeah, but then no matter what you use, you're going to end up hating it.
You know, I was listening to yesterday. I've done this thing now, and now if a song pops in my head and I can't get it out, I just tell Google to play it, and then I listen to it. I'm like, okay, maybe this will help.
Does that purge the song?
Yeah, kind of, sort of, but it also leads to other things. So I had, and I don't know where this came from, I had the song Southern Nights by Glen Campbell stuck in
my head. Southern Nights.
There you go. Have you ever? Right? I had it stuck in my head. I couldn't get Google to play it. I kept asking for it. It kept playing something else. So finally I said, play his greatest hits. So his greatest hits come up, and let me tell you, he has some great songs.
It's just Southern Nights for 11 tracks.
Yeah, no, it's not. Oh, it's Southern Nights. It's Rhinestone Cowboy. It's By the Time I Get to Phoenix.
Did Glen Campbell die recently?
Galveston. Yeah, he died last year. Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
But it also had the song that was, I always considered, as a disc jockey playing his music when I worked for an oldies station, there was one song I'm like, this really is the best song he ever did. And I was comforted in the knowledge that after he died, and I read several reviews and write-ups on Glen Campbell, everyone also agreed with me that the best song he ever did was Wichita Lineman. And if you've never heard the song Wichita Lineman, I would encourage you to bring it up on Siri or whatever and listen to Wichita Lineman, because it is a wonderful song. It was written by a guy named Jimmy Webb, who wrote most of his hits, and a great songwriter. And so I played that yesterday, and I was like, all right, look at me listening to Wichita Lineman, which is like 1967.
Yeah.
I mean, it's old. And back then, everything was orchestrated. They don't do that anymore, right? There was a time, I don't care if you were Ray Charles or Glen Campbell, there was an orchestra on your record.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I am a lineman for the county, here come the strings. You know, and this is a country song, and here come the strings. There was just like a period in the 60s where everyone put an orchestra on their albums.
Hmm.
And you don't see that anymore. I mean, you don't even see actual instruments anymore.
No, yeah, it's a lot of electronic instrumentation.
It's all just done in electronics.
Sure.
All done on the computer.
So this is you basically saying, man, the kids these days, they don't understand instrumentation.
No, not at all. Because, I mean, I am progressive. Why get the strings if you've got it right there in the keyboard? If you can sample it, why not? I'm just saying that what I found funny about it was it didn't matter what type of music you did. Country music had, you know, a string section. You know, which when you think now, that is kind of weird. Unless your string section is Charlie Daniels with a fiddle, you know, that's fine. but if it's an oboe and a cello, that seems odd for country music.
Well, it does, and it's just another example of robots taking jobs away from people.
Yes.
So now we have a whole bunch of cellists out of work because of a keyboard. Thanks, yes. Robots.
A cellist.
There's a guy in my class in Cincinnati, and you know every class has a guy, has one person that's there just to prove to everyone else in the room how smart they are, and
okay.
that they believe in their heart that they should probably be the one teaching the class.
Right.
And so I'm like, I was talking about an editing service that we use when we have volume headshot jobs and how we upload them. And I said, and that's actually kind of cool because a lot of the retouchers are overseas. So usually, like, they're getting the retouching done while you're asleep. And then when you wake up, the job's typically done. So that's actually kind of a cool thing. And that guy rolled his eyes and went, like, real hard exhale and an
not the,
eye roll.
Not the anything but
yeah.
that.
For, you know, I guess he had objection to jobs going overseas or something. And so I said, that's interesting that you say that. It's like $2.50 to retouch an image. I said, if they were all U.S.-based retouchers, I said, you'd be complaining that it was $6 an image instead of complaining that the jobs are shipped overseas. So I said, I'm pretty sure there's no way to make you happy.
That's right.
And by the way,
it would be $15, by the way.
That's yeah. And by the way, the U.S. economy has lost like 100 times more jobs to automation than outsourcing.
Right, to outsourcing.
And so it's like, you really need to worry about the robots and not about jobs going overseas. It's like, that job was never going to happen here in the United States anyway.
Well, this country has always built itself on the backs of cheap labor, whether it was cheap labor that we had here in the form of slavery or whether it was...
Or children.
Or children. Or was it, they say, the Chinese built the railroads. You know, we always built on the back of cheap labor, and now we're at the point where we don't have cheap labor anymore, so it's we bring in the illegal immigrants, or we ship it out to India or Vietnam. And what happens is those countries, through they're using cheap labor, eventually they get enough money to where they don't want to work cheap anymore, and then they have to find a country to do it to.
Yeah.
Which is what's happening in China right now. This is why your call center isn't in China, because China is actually developing a middle class. They're getting so much money now that they soon will be have the problem we have, and that they're like, we can't find any cheap labor.
They're having a huge economic renaissance in China. Absolutely.
Should we talk about photography at some point?
Yeah, well, I was just going to get on that. Speaking of cheap stuff from China. No. I was having this conversation with my with one of my good friends, and he was talking about making something about American manufacturing. And I'm like, what is the most American vehicle that you can think of?
American vehicle?
Like, what's the most American... Right now, if you said what vehicle, modern vehicle, made this year, what is the most popular, like, American that you think this is represents America?
Well, it's got to be a truck. Vehicle? It's got to be a Chevy truck or a Ford truck, or if you want to go high-end, a Corvette.
Yeah, so probably, absolutely. But let's say the Ford F-150. It's the most popular selling truck in America every year. More people buy a Ford F-150 than any other truck.
One of them is the most popular in America, but not in Texas. Is it Ford F-150 popular in America, but the Chevy is the popular one in Texas, or is it
that sounds accurate.
Or is it flipped? We'll just
say that for the sake of this argument, that's true. So it's like, you know, that if you buy that American car from an American manufacturer, you know that thing's made in Mexico. The plant where they make Ford F-150 is Mexico. My Toyota Corolla was made in the United States.
Right.
My neighbor's Honda Civic was made in the United States. And by the way, it doesn't matter where it was assembled, every part in that thing came from somewhere overseas.
Sure.
There's really no way to be there's really no way to be an authentic purchaser of American products, because something, whether it's the dye used in the ink to print on that t-shirt that was technically made in America, also comes from India or Malaysia or wherever. So it's just sort of like it's nice to think about, yes, I want to support my country and the economy in my country, but in reality, it ends up being that you can't do that with 100% authenticity. It's not possible.
Well, you know what I don't want to say it's a problem is, but you know what really did this? You know me, I love to find stories that you would never think that this would be an interesting story, but then it ends up to me being interesting, and that is the unbelievable low cost of shipping from overseas, because they built a new generation of huge, huge shipping containers, ships. And as a result, those big rectangular boxes that they put on the shipping container ships?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You want like half of one of those coming over from, say, Vietnam? So you get half of one of those. Now, let's say you sell coffee mugs. How many coffee mugs could you put in half of one of those containers? A boatload, right?
10,000.
You can get that for under $1,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Half of one of those coming. I said that to my niece and her husband, who actually do ship stuff over.
That's mind-blowingly cheap.
They do ship, but they own a wholesaler. And he was like, oh, yeah, sometimes less. He goes, I've paid $200, $400 to ship a half a container of stuff over from Vietnam.
I'm pretty sure it's also very competitive. Like, you have the ability to choose from different shippers.
The ships are so big, and they move so much. And also, what changed it all, believe it or not, I believe was Oakland. Because it was Oakland that, during the Vietnam War, were the ones who came up with the idea of, we are going to set it up so every ship that comes in this port needs to carry the same exact size container, and then we can use these giant cranes to pull these containers off.
And if you've ever been to like the port of Los Angeles or Hong Kong or Savannah, you can see the gigantic
giant cranes
that unload these containers.
And they
ships.
Did that for shipping war materials during Vietnam War, and it became the standard worldwide. And now, as a result, the same type of container is used everywhere in the world. So it doesn't matter where you're shipping to or from; it's the same container and the same cranes.
And the ones that fit right on a train car.
And so it's unbelievable. But I was blown away by how cheap it is. You can have thousands and thousands and thousands of goods shipped over from Malaysia for $1,000 or $500.
You can move your whole house.
Yeah. It's crazy how cheap it is. And so that's why, it's really hard to beat, when you've got the guys working for $2 an hour, in the Nike factory.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's just how it goes. But hey, speaking of cheap stuff from overseas, I was reading on the Canon Rumors website.
Yes.
There was a leaked information of a guy who says that they are testing mirrorless full-frame prototypes. in the factory.
I read somewhere at some convention this last weekend or whatever that Canon has confirmed that they are going hard after the mirrorless market, that they are shifting resources from DSLR to mirrorless.
Yeah, we talked about last week the M50 came out, which is like the my M5, which, you know, I love my little Canon M5, my travel camera. So the M50 came out, and it's basically the same camera, except it does 4K video instead of 1080p, and it's $200 cheaper.
Yeah, and it's cheaper.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Canon.
Thanks a lot. And I had been doing footage and testing to do an M5 review on my YouTube channel, and now it's like, why? What's the point?
I was thinking about yesterday. I was looking at all-in-one lenses because I about every year or so, I dabble with the idea of when I go to the beach, I shoot with two lenses, a 24-70 and a 70-200.
70-200, yeah.
And I always dabble with the idea of what if I just got an all-in-one that was like 24-200 or 24-300, and then I would never switch on the beach. The downside is it couldn't be f2.8. But I never shoot at f2.8 on the beach. It's too bright to shoot at f2.8.
Unless you got like a neutral density filter or something.
I'm shooting at f4, at the lowest f4. And these lenses are going to be like f3.5 to 5.6 on the long end. Okay. And I dabble in that idea every year. And then I look and the lens is $2,500 and the dabbling stops. And also it's got to be telescopic. It's got to be where the lens actually moves.
Right.
You know, it gets long on you. Mm-hmm. And but I still toy around with everything. But here's the other thing I read, which I didn't know this, and about lenses. People say, okay, I never shoot at f2.8, so why would I need an f2.8 lens? Right? And when I think about it, I rarely shoot at f2.8. I can't think of, to f2.8, unless I'm shooting a super wide shot trying to get a room with no lighting in it, atmosphere to show a room for the planner, then I'm not shooting anybody at f2.8. Why? And then I read somewhere, and I don't know if you've ever heard this, you know how they always say that every lens has a sweet spot for clarity?
Yeah, it's usually like three stops up from the wide open or something.
Bingo.
Like that.
That's I had never heard that. I had always heard that it was like, well, this lens is like f8 is its sweet spot. But what I didn't know was the sweet spot is determined usually by what its wide open setting is. So if your wide open setting is 2.8, then your sweet spot is going to be what? Do the math real quick.
F8, I reckon.
5.6 and halfway up is F8. That's F8. But if your lens is 4.5, your lens is 5.6 at full zoom, then your sweet spot now is going to be
F13.
Like okay. Which if you're doing full zoom and portrait work, F13 is not shallow at all. So So now you're going to have to come down three stops from what is your best setting for that lens. So I had never known that, and because I had many times questioned why I even use a lens that's f2.8 when I never shoot at f2.8. But now I'm like, oh no, because what I do shoot at is three stops over f2.8 quite a bit.
I have heard that before, but I to be honest, I don't think I've ever had that in my head when I was taking a picture.
I haven't either. You know. But it's interesting that's the way it works. And here's my question though: does it work no matter which end of the lens you're at? In other words, if you're using a variable lens. Is the sweet spot at 24, three stops above 3.5, and the sweet spot at 300, three stops above 5.6, because that's where it is for at that, or is it always three stops above the widest aperture at its shortest throw?
I know the answer to that. I don't care.
You do not know. This is technical photography. We're supposed, every once in a while,
I do not
talk
care,
about this stuff.
I guess. Like, I don't, I, that's just not.
But
you know,
should care because buying an f2.8 lens, considerably bigger investment than buying an f4.5 lens.
Right. Yeah. But even still, it's going to be the same because if you bet the four, you're going to be shooting at 11 for the sweet spot. 2.8, you'd be shooting at 8. So, like, I mean, it depends on.
But if you're talking about a variable zoom, shooting at 200. With a lens that's 2.8 at 200 means your sweet spot is 8. Shooting at 200 with a lens that's 5.6 at 200, does that mean does your sweet spot change with a variable zoom lens if your aperture minimum changes? That's what I want.
Oh, I get what you mean.
Because in those lenses, your aperture, you still don't care.
still don't care. Hold on. We got a listener chiming in. Says, let's look at this. Joe Cosentino says, that is just common sense. Been working that way for years. 1.4 gets you best at about 2.8, 2.5. Thanks, Joe, for chiming in on that. I had no, yeah, I just never, that's never in my head. I'm thinking, like, what's the intended use of the image? And what am I trying to make it look like? Because honestly, what does the sweet spot mean? It's like, you got to get in that sweet spot. I mean, it's, if I'm just off of that by a stop, my image is still going to be real sharp.
Yeah, I'm not thinking about it either. I'm never thinking about it. But having read it yesterday, I was like, oh, well, okay. Well, that's good to know. If I wasn't using this f2.8 lens, then I probably would have less sharp images.
Well, I guess it depends. I mean, I just find the lens. Here's a little math problem for you. The more expensive the lens, usually the better it is.
Yeah, that's another way to solve it. You don't have to do any of the research or anything. Just say, which one's the most expensive one?
That's going to be the good one.
Yeah, that's going to be the better
real,
lens
real
for
good
you.
One. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
I also read yesterday that another film has been discontinued. For those of you who are film buffs, and by that I mean the one person who watches the show, who listens to the show, who's a film buff, Pete.
Hi, Pete.
And that's the Agfa Vista film. They are finally just completely discontinuing it. And Agfa is made by Fuji, and their Vista film. Actually, when you buy a Fuji camera, this film is emulated in the camera. You can pick this as one of the emulation films, but they're finally discontinuing it completely. And speaking of Pete had some sort of rare new Kodachrome film or something this week. Did you see that? He was on Facebook about that.
Yeah, I did see. You know, I do follow him, and I did see that. Yeah,
some guy, he must know somebody at Canon or whatever, and they sent him. You know, he was one of the first people to get his hands on this new film, and I so envy his excitement over that.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's like you talked about a few episodes ago. One of the things I wish is that I could get as much joy out of anything.
Yes.
As like a 5-year-old. We were at Disney yesterday. We had a Disney day because I had I got something else to talk about too. We were down. I had a client meeting on a Saturday, which really hacks me off. But we just, since it was down that way, we decided I dropped the girls off at Disney, went in my meeting and met up with them later. But we had promised Ellie that she could drive one of the race cars in the Tomorrowland Speedway, which is basically like the little go-karts that you can't take off the track. Like there's right. No way you can let a 2-year-old drive it because they can't do anything wrong.
Right. You just go. But there's a big cement thing. A cement thing in the middle between the tires to keep you from going off the track.
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
And your 2-year-old just goes back and forth, left and right, so it's just bang, bang, bang.
So Ellie recently, that's exactly what happened. I got video to that effect. Ellie has just turned 3 back in January, and so we were there a couple weeks ago, but the line was like 2 hours for this thing. We're like, no. So Julie got fast passes. We went down there just really to do this one thing, and the big stupid grin on her face from driving that, you know, I was in the passenger seat just watching her do it, thinking like, man, I wish it anything made me that happy.
It's
like
happy.
I don't feel like I'm not an unhappy person, you know, but damn, she looked happy.
Yeah, we don't get that sort of happiness anymore, dude.
Yeah, I guess we don't.
We really don't.
I mean, yeah, well, too much weighing on our minds, I suppose. But so I got this this thing that's been happening to me recently. It's happened twice in the last couple of months. For event photography, because we do quite a bit of event photography. I've had the potential clients wanting me to come down to where the event is going to be a couple of months in advance and meet with them to interview. Now, I've had the thing where you go down and you do a site walk with the client who's already booked you so mm-hmm. they can show you where everything's going to be. Mm-hmm. But this is like, come and sit down and interview with us because we're going to be meeting with all of our potential vendors for this conference.
All right.
And then you basically have an interview with them. Like the reason that it makes me irritated is because there is nothing that we could talk about that we couldn't talk about on the phone or in a Skype session.
Don't get me started on that.
Like it's absolutely
don't even
this is corporate photography. They don't need to it's not a wedding. Like you want to sometimes you want to meet your wedding and portrait clients a lot of times, depending on your business model, because you really the whole idea is to make them love you. It's like a relationship marketing thing
right.
for a high end business.
That's different.
But this is corporate photography. A chimpanzee with about 45 minutes of training could probably do a halfway decent job on event photography. And so I just
resent that statement. That's. Not true. Good event photography. But
Blu-ray. I'm
but
sorry I had
true,
to replace you with Coco, all right? He was just cheaper.
But what is true is that
you
just need to see my work to see that I do a good job. You don't need to interview me.
Right, correct. Yeah, I will send you the sample of every event I've shot in the last year. I'll send you the full gallery. I can Skype with you. But to drive 45 minutes across town to the, you know, to meet at a hotel and sit there with somebody and go, okay, good, well, we'll be in touch. And you're like, you got to be kidding me. Like,
right.
This is my day off. Like, this
I made the mistake of commenting on someone on Facebook recently who was saying, here's what you should be making sure that your photographer for your wedding will do. And one of the things she said was, and make sure that they're willing to, that they're going to come, you know, the week before to the venue and, you know, and check it out and everything. And I commented,
even though I've worked there 100 times.
And I commented, any really good wedding photographer does not need to come out a week before and see the venue. You can arrive the day of the event a little bit early and walk the venue. It doesn't take long. And any good photographer takes all of about 30 seconds to sight a room. I can walk into any place and tell you in 30 seconds exactly what I need to do to set this room up for lighting. Or on a venue, you know, where the good pictures? Well, I can walk the grounds before the wedding and see where the good pictures are. But another thing, I hate to admit, another thing is I'm going to Google the venue and see where every other photographer has shot.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in Google image search, folks, I go onto their website. I go onto their Google business listing.
I do not need to go. Yeah. I do not need to go down there and walk the venue the week before. Not to mention the fact that the lighting is not going to be the same the week before at 2 o'clock as it is going to be on the day of your wedding at 6.
Right. Absolutely.
So it's just walking the venue is not really that necessary. And I mean, and this person that I said this to absolutely doubled down. Well, you know, any good photographer should do that. Any good photographer would do that. And I'm like,
any good photographer can walk into a room they've never been in before and in 10 seconds figure out where the best light is, where the best place to take a picture is.
Yeah, you don't. That's my point. I want to go.
Somebody who's unsure of themselves that, will want to go.
If your photographer insists on doing a walkthrough, that's a sign that your photographer's worried that they're going to screw up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. To me, that's a lack of confidence. And if it's somewhere like, if I've done weddings out of town where I'm in an unfamiliar city, and we'll go a day early, and I will absolutely make sure I know how to get to the venue and where to park and stuff like that.
Oh, but yeah.
Like,
I'm more worried about getting there than I am once I'm there, I'm good. It's all good once I'm on site.
But, okay, so let's break that statement down. Is a good wedding photographer, let's say that's someone who's going to have some experience, who's been in business in their town in a while, and with some exception, is there any time that you're going to get an inquiry for a wedding after you've been in business 10 years that there's going to be a venue that you haven't already worked at?
Very rare. It's
very rarely, right. Like, yeah. Maybe if it's at someone's house or something like that. But for the most part, you're going to be in a place that you've already been. Like,
yeah, but if it's a place I haven't been, I show up the day of an hour early.
Absolutely.
And I walk, because like, especially if like you're getting married, you're staying at the hotel and getting married at the hotel and the reception's at the hotel. Well, I'll show up an hour early and walk the entire grounds, but it's more so that I know where your room is, where the reception hall is, where you're getting married. I want familiarity with my surroundings so I know how to move from place to place easily and where I should put my gear and stuff like that. And also, I'm looking around going, okay, ideas for where to shoot, but I've already researched every good photographer who's ever shot there online. I know where all the good spots are. You know,
so we can amend this statement to not say any good photographer will come out to the venue the week before. Any good photographer can make a good image in any room.
Yes.
Under any circumstances, because that's what we're trained to do.
I shot that wedding that you were in Orlando, and I did not go a week before to the venue in Orlando. I drove up the day of, and I got there early. And guess what? All my plans still went to crap when it started raining.
Yeah, where's your wedding? At a golf and country club? Yeah, I've done that. Yeah, where's your wedding? At a hotel? Yeah, totally. I can do that too. Like, there aren't that many types of places that you can get married. Where is it? Is it an art museum? Fine. Where is it? It's in an old barn. Yeah, I can do that.
I got like, that. Yeah. It doesn't take me that long to look around and go, here's where the picture is. Here's where the sun is. Here's where the open shade is. And here's where, you can just glance and see that. So
we are live on Facebook also at the same time we're recording this. So if you're part of the live audience right now, go ahead and chime in and let us know what you think. Do you have to go out to a venue? Do you like to go out to the venue days before and sight the place up and tell us what you think? If you disagree, that's totally cool. You're wrong, and it's fine, but go ahead and let us
Having us live on Facebook at the same time is such an educational experience for, for us. You're wrong.
It's fine. It's okay to be wrong.
There was a show on Community Access Cable in Texas when I lived there. No, it was Community Access Cable, and it was called "What's It to You?" And anytime somebody called in with something, they just go, "What's it to you?" And the show was called "What's It to You?" No matter what they said, "What's it to you?" You're stupid.
I'm, I'm so glad we're doing this live on the day when I somehow, in a freak facial scrub accident, have cut the tip of my nose.
Yeah.
Now I've got like this big red dot. And
you do.
I don't know if you've ever had a cut on the end of your nose, but they do not stop. Like, they do not close up easily.
No, they don't. And your nose is very sensitive. You know, the question is, what's more sensitive, your nose or your finger? Close your eyes and then slowly bring your finger to your nose. And then mm-hmm. which one do you feel first? Go ahead, everybody.
Well,
you'll feel the nose.
My finger.
Your nose will feel the finger coming in before your finger feels the nose.
Yeah, my nose feels my finger before my finger.
Your nose
feels
is
my
more
nose
sensitive to your finger. And why? I don't know. Why would it be that your nose has a more sensitive sense of touch than your finger does? That doesn't make much sense when you think about it.
Yeah, evolution's a crazy thing.
Yes. That and the sweet spot on lens, two things that I think about far more than I need to.
This is a really educational episode.
We've had some good educational stuff in here.
Speaking, I was thinking the other day, I had this really interesting conversation. I posted into a Facebook group, and I got some pushback about it, about how there are photography instructors out there that basically they teach one method, one style, and the way to do things. And I'm generally against that, because in one day, what I did was, in one 24-hour period, I photographed an attorney in a boardroom with like a big window overlooking the city in a backlight. And then like I also photographed a bunch of commercial images for an irrigation company. And then I photographed a model portfolio all within the same 24 hours.
Right.
And if I was just shooting one specific thing, I wouldn't have been able to make the money I made in that day or to create the images under those circumstances. We got Pete Wright, great wedding photographer, chiming in. Works for Canon. Hi, Pete. If it's a new venue, I like to make a visit more than anything to meet the staff, to find out any rules they have and schmooze them to get around those rules, but also to scout the spot and know the good spots to shoot, but only if it was extremely local.
Extremely local, which means like it's next door. If it's next door, I'll wander over.
If I can walk there barefoot, that's when I'll go.
Right.
Like, that's pretty, when I don't have to put shoes on.
So anyway,
but that's an interesting point that Pete makes, is to get a wedding photographer, you live and die on your relationships with venues sometimes.
Oh, yes, you do.
And so that's a really good point, to go out there and to meet the staff. If you can get the on-site coordinator to sort of, meet up with you and walk the site, that's a good way to build relationships there. So that's a good point that we hadn't addressed. Thanks, Pete.
I have a venue here locally that didn't put me on their list, you know, because they're very draconian about who gets to be on their recommended list.
Yes.
But did ask me for files, and I gave them some files, hoping maybe I would get on the list, and they didn't put me on the list, but one of my pictures is hanging in their foyer.
Foyer.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. They have my picture in their venue, and yet I'm not on their approved vendors list.
Yeah, what is with that? Like, there was an article that was published about... And I saw it was vendors and planners arguing with each other in the comments about the recommended vendor list idea. And the whole idea is basically like, ostensibly what you get from the venues is we like to use people that we know and we trust that are professional, and it's for insurance purposes and yada, yada, yada. But from a vendor's point of view, it's basically like it's a pay-to-play gig.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases. And
yeah.
So... Can it be both of those things? Is that possible? But it always irritated me, especially here in Orlando. We call it the Orlando Wedding Mafia. Like, it's like the busiest venues are pretty much locked down. Although I think photographers sometimes are able to not be necessarily included in that as other venues. But almost every venue has specific caterers you have to use and stuff like that, and only certain things that they will allow, which is really tough. Like, if you want to get married in a particular place or have an event at a particular venue, and what if the two or three photographers on their list, what if you don't like their work?
Like, well, I mean, usually it's a recommended list, but you're saying there's venues who are like, these are the only photographers we allow to shoot here?
Correct.
Oh, that's bull.
Yeah, and most of the good venues are locked down. You have to use a specific caterer. Like when Julie and I got married, this was 6 years ago.
Even more so with catering.
Yeah, catering is bad. Yeah. That's some cutthroat stuff. It would be really difficult to start a catering business looking to do weddings, because you would have to muscle your way into any good venue.
Right.
So we searched for months to find a place where we could do what we wanted. We're like, we're bringing in what food we want. We're bringing in a bartender and a bar and what booze we want. And we're going to use whatever vendors we want. It took us a while to find a place.
See, and that's one of the reasons why I am not the world's most successful wedding photographer, is because I just can't play that game. I can't, I cannot just smooth and under the table. And what if I give you 10% if you, you know, recommend me? I just can't do it.
One of the things that I always hated about being in the wedding business, and why one of the things that makes me happy about not being part in the wedding business anymore, is that I do not love the schmoozing that you have to do, as Pete called it. Yeah, I don't dig it. I never did. I was like, look, let the client pick who they want. You know, let me be responsible for bringing in my own business. But I don't want to go to your perfect wedding guide luncheon. I also want to know
who are these photographers who apparently are have caused so much disruptions at these vendors? Because I've worked the vendors where the venue or the planner contacts me ahead of time, and you can tell it's because they've had something about their day or their wedding go horribly bad in their mind because of this photographer that they had in the past. And so now they want to be with every photographer. They want to put the clamp down right away. And I'm like, what are these photographers doing to mess up the day? I mean, I'm pretty unobtrusive. The worst thing I could be accused of doing is, well, they're a little late going in for the beginning of the reception because I kept them a little bit longer. And the only time that happens is when the ceremony went off the rails and I got them later. But if you tell me I'm going to have you for 1 hour and you start my hour on time, then I'm done. I'm going to have you back at your reception on the schedule. You know, if I go late, it's only because you started me late. And always with the approval of the bride and groom. But other than that, I can't imagine anything else I could do that would upset the venue or the planner. But apparently there's photographers out there that are doing it.
I've seen stuff of wedding photographers being too obtrusive or wearing like jeans and a t-shirt to a wedding, stuff like that. We got a comment in from Zach Thomas who says, the pirate ship here in St. Augustine once told me that if I wanted to shoot on their boat, I would need to give them a commission. I told them I'd shoot from a ladder on the dock.
Everybody's got their hand out.
Yeah, they just got lawyered. Well done, Zach. Good for you, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the not being in the wedding world anymore, but they're still kind of schmoozing and networking. I got my first Chamber of Commerce meeting next week. I got a couple of events. So this is new. I looked into one of the local chambers of commerce in my area and found out that because there are cities all over Central Florida, and you can join any chamber of commerce you want. You don't necessarily have to be in that city to join. They'll take your money.
Sure.
And so we have an event coming up with them, and I looked on their website, and not only do they have not great headshots for their board of directors, which is in there for me, but on top of that, they have 87 law firms in the Chamber of Commerce and 3 photographers, and they're all wedding photographers.
Well.
So I was like, hey, yo.
Yeah.
I'll take sure. That. Okay, Marty in Newkirk writes in, says, we are there to photograph what's going on, not to be what's going on. Some are obnoxious.
Some are obnoxious. Really? Yeah, see, I have no experience with other wedding photographers. So I don't
know. I've been a lot of times, and maybe this is wedding photographer bias, but it's the video guys that always get in the way for me.
Yes.
I was at a wedding, and it was like at the beginning of the 5D Mark II, the sort of cinematic weddings. And dude, they had 4 videographers all shooting with Canon DSLRs that looked just like mine, all dressed in dark clothes, just like I was. And they had brought a crane, like a whole jib system, to shoot the dance floor. It was really obnoxious, like super, super obnoxious. And I could say, like, all the guests, they don't know the difference between those guys and me. They think we're all together.
Right, right.
You know, and that's not going to be my fault. We're shooting with the same equipment, and they're taking up all this space and causing all this disruption, and that's got nothing to do with me.
My favorite was when I had the video guy follow the bride down the aisle behind her, shooting low in cargo shorts and a t-shirt.
Like, let's have a, like, you don't have to wear a tux, because back when I was
not just that. It's that shot you're getting, which is a shot from behind of her.
You have to get the train
coming down,
like,
coming
that's
down
a
the
big
okay
shot.
That's fine, but it's not more important than my shot of her coming down with her father. Okay, that's the shot you must have right. That shot, and you've just ruined it for me so that you could get what's going to be 2 seconds of B-roll.
Right, exactly. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Like, if in the wedding album I'm going to design, that's going to be a 2-page spread with the train and the whole church and mom and dad walking her down the aisle. And now I've got you and your stupid cargo shorts.
Yeah, and now you're in it. So, hey, maybe, you know, a little bit of
Yeah.
A little consideration.
What's the dolphin say?
A little consideration would be nice.
Yeah, it's although I got to tell you, out of all the wedding vendors that I've ever had trouble with, the only times it's ever come to like angry words, violently confronting another vendor, it's always a DJ.
Really?
Always a DJ. Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
I've never really
there's
had a
something
problem
about
with the
like there's a certain type of person that ends up a lot of times being the wedding DJ. Because you got the wedding DJs that they're there for the event. They love the couple. They're great. They're fantastic. They're all about the event. And then there are others that's like, I'm the DJ and I am the entertainment.
Oh,
I am the show here.
I'm
like,
the talent.
It is about me now.
I'm the talent.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right. And I was working the wedding with my dad once, and I remember my dad and the wedding DJ almost getting into a fist fight. But I can't tell you how many times I've been in the bathroom taking a leak, and then you hear, like, through the door, and now the bride is going to dance with her father, and you're like, son of a, like, zipping up and trying to run back and grab your camera, you know? Like, yeah, it's always a DJ.
I had that happen at a bar mitzvah. I was eating. It was a bat mitzvah, and I was eating, and I was sitting there with the planner. I don't like to leave the room, period. But in this case, I left the room to eat because the planner said, go eat, and the planner was eating. So I'm like, okay, I'm sitting here with the planner. So I feel pretty good that nothing important is going to happen while I'm sitting here talking to the planner.
Right, if there's a safe place to be.
Right, and then I heard the horror. And so I run back.
Oh, the horror.
The horror.
The horror.
The horror of the horror.
The humanity. The
and
horror.
So, and if you don't know, the horror is when they pick you up in a chair. And so I run back in, and they've taken the girl down. They're done. And I go to the DJ, and I'm like, you got to put her back up. He goes, what? I go, you got to put her back up. I wasn't in the room. He goes, you got to tell me when you leave the room. And I'm like, I get that, but I was with the planner, and I didn't think you'd do the horror without the planner being in the room. So,
yeah, how hard is it as a DJ to make sure that, like, all the vendors are in place ready when you're about to do something?
You know, I don't
like,
know
you
about
should
that.
Have
I don't
any
know
level
I can really
experience.
Blame him for that, because it's not his job to make sure I'm doing my job. You know, it was an unfortunate thing, and he put her back up, you know, and I get, and he's right. I could have told him I was leaving the room, but it's that period when everybody eats, and I was with the planner, so I didn't. So it's a little bit on me too, and I'm not being accusing of that particular DJ, but it's the only time that's ever happened to me where I came back in, I said, you got to put her back up, dude.
Yeah.
You got to put her back up in the chair. And he did, and he said it on the mic. Well, the photographer didn't get the picture. We got to put her back up. Oh, thanks a lot.
Oh.
Well, he wasn't going to take credit for it. He wasn't going to be like, you know, why would we do it? He had to have a reason, and so he had to do it before everybody left the floor. So I wasn't mad at him about it. I was mostly embarrassed, you know, that I had to do it, but I had to have that shot. I can't not have that shot. So
to your wedding photographers out there, if you go into a reception, always have the talk with the DJ when you arrive at reception, and just say, hey, I'm going to try and make sure that I'm checking with you and let you know if I have to leave the room for anything. But could you do me a favor? And if you're going to do anything and you don't see me, just hang on a sec. Just because I'm going to do my best to meet that obligation.
Well, I tell my brides that when in our final meeting, in my list of checks that I have with my bride, one of the things I'll tell them is, okay, during the course of your wedding day, if you're about to do anything important, if you're going to cut a cake, if you're going to do anything, or if you're just eating dinner, but you're going to decided you want to get up and go hug, dance with grandma, look around and make sure I'm on you. I said, because I'll tell you if I'm going to leave the room, but just in case. I mean, maybe I'm over in a corner doing something. I don't know. I turn around and I just miss something really great. I said, so just don't do anything important without seeing me, making sure that I'm there. You know, so I'll tell
them. That's good to do that with your couple, too.
That's actually what I'm talking about. That's what I tell.
Yeah, no, that's a good pro tip, Boo. And by the way, for those of you who are viewing and you have a horrible vendor experience that you'd like us to talk about on the show, go ahead and send us an email or comment right into the group. That's fine, too. We would love to hear which type of wedding vendor do you hate the most as a photographer.
That's it's about time to wrap this thing up, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's been a real hoot.
It has, in fact, been a hoot. You can find us online. We are, well, on our Facebook page, of course. Just go to facebook.com/photobombpodcast. Our website is photobombpodcast.com. You can find Gary at hughesfioretti.com. Uh-huh. You can find me at BooRayPerry.com. And you can email us questions@photobombpodcast.com. Do you have anything you need to promote? You're going to be talking
or
speaking?
Yeah, actually, I just wanted to reiterate, I'm doing a two-day hands-on marketing class at Florida Photography Workshops coming up in June. This is going to be something I've never done before. Live hands-on creating, live fun marketing materials, videos, the whole nine yards, floridaphotographyworkshops.org. And there's my class and several other incredible instructors that are going to be there. And I would highly recommend that if you want to get a handle on doing social media marketing in your photography business and how to create content and how to launch it and which platforms you should be using, go there, sign up for that class, come spend a couple of days hanging out with me. It's going to be a real good time. It's in Daytona Beach. It's an absolute blast, and don't miss out on doing that. Also, I will post, I post a link into the group. I will be doing a class at Adorama in New York City that they're going to live broadcast on the web, and this is my, and it is sponsored by Canon, which is really, really excellent. So I'm pretty excited that Canon is sponsoring that. And so you can watch that for free, and the link is on the Photobomb podcast page. So if you want to watch me speak at Adorama, hopefully I don't crash and burn, then just follow the link on the page and you can go and see me do that.
All right. And we will see you back here again next week.
All right. We'll see you later.